What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? It's estimated over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com today.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, makes you think all the world's a sunny day. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. So today, we are going to talk about something that I think is a pretty interesting topic, and that's the automated description of images. This is yet another topic I came across in Alexis Madrigal's 5 Intriguing Things email, which, if you're not signed up for, you should get on that. It is one of my favorite sources of daily delights on the internet.
So what is this idea?
Well, it's what it sounds like, but I'll start with an analogy.
Okay.
Imagine you're going to something like Google Image Search.
Okay.
Now, what happens when you do a Google Image Search? You type in some words, and it comes back with images. Well, that's kind of strange, because how does it translate the difference between a collection of pixels on the one hand and the words you've typed in? Well, one of the things, obviously, is that there's data associated with images.
Metadata. Yeah. Right. It's either captions that people have manually typed in, or perhaps keywords that they've attached to those images, or something else on the website's page that's going to clue you into what that image is about.
Like the file name or whatever.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
You could also use an approach that is sort of refined by humans. So you could have humans sitting there working on your algorithm where they go through image after image from selected keywords and say, this is a good match for that keyword, and this is a bad match for that keyword.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of helps you connect words to images. Or let's say, what if there was no text associated with an image? Could you still do it? Well, in some cases, you probably could, right? Because we've gotten to a certain level with image recognition. There are automated programs that can look at this and say, this is a human face.
Or this is a cat, as we have discussed before on the show.
And we'll discuss again on this one, I'm sure.
Right. And we I think we don't know the full extent to which artificial intelligence like that already figures into something like Google image search. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a small part of it, but obviously we're relying heavily on text associated with images. Okay, but now let's take that same last example, just identifying an image with no associated text, and say, could we do that with a complex scenario? So it's not just a picture of a human face or, say, a bowling ball, which would be pretty easy to recognize. You know, it's round, it's got three holes.
Mm-hmm.
But something like, there is a pizza sitting in a bathtub, or a man throwing a sandwich off a cliff.
You've got a lot of food-related imagery in your head here.
I said those because I actually searched for them earlier before I'd had lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And I found no images of someone throwing a sandwich off a cliff.
Well, why would anyone want to throw a sandwich off a cliff?
I don't know, but you know what? I would be really surprised if there wasn't at least one picture of that out there somewhere.
Well, if there's not, there's definitely a stock photography opportunity lying in wait.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what we're doing after the podcast.
There's a reason that this would be hard, right? To describe a complex image, not just one thing, but a complex sort of scene that requires a sentence to describe it.
Right, with prepositional phrases and situational relativity.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to describe the relationship between all the different elements that are inside that picture.
Right, and so that last example is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
How computers can look at an image with a complex scene taking place and turn that into a correct and accurate description made out of words.
And this goes into a key element of artificial intelligence. It's not just the ability to describe something, but the ability to recognize it. It's something that can go beyond just describing a picture. And we talk a lot about how there are things that we humans are really good at. It comes naturally to us. It's the way we work. But they are things that do not necessarily come naturally to the machines we make. And the example I gave was if you had a group of people, you got a bunch of people together and you told all of them, I want you to draw this picture, and you describe the picture to them. And in my case, I said, well, just imagine that there's a young lady sitting at a table reading a book, and just make the picture as detailed as you can. But that's all I give is just the elements that have to be there is there's a seated lady that she's at a table and she's reading a book. And so you could have all these different types of interpretations of that request.
Sure. I might draw a picture of a lady sitting in a cafe.
Right.
Reading a book.
Yeah. Or it could be
at a desk at a library.
Yep. There's so many different opportunities there. It could just be a kitchen table, whatever. But if I took all the pictures that everyone drew, and then I went to a separate group of people and I showed them all those different pictures. And I said, all right, so what do all these pictures have in common? Pretty sure that a lot of people would end up saying, okay, these are all pictures of a young lady reading a book at a table.
It would be kind of weird if in every picture she was reading Tech War.
That would be a very weird.
That would be a strange coincidence.
For lots of reasons, that would be weird. But at any rate, yeah, I mean, we would have essentially people answering the same, giving the same basic description. Now, there are a lot of things going on in that scenario I just described. It's not just the fact that you're able to recognize things. It's that you're able to draw the conclusion that all these different pictures, even though the details are different, are showing you essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
Which is something that would be necessary if we were using an image search that relied on this automated image description.
Right. Well, I mean, and furthermore, we as humans are able to recognize a lady sitting at a table reading a book from any angle that it's drawn from.
Right, right. Yeah.
Pretty easily.
Yeah, we can tell like that this is the book, this is the lady, this is the table. If you show just pixels to a machine that hasn't had any way of telling the difference between, what these pixels actually mean, that machine might not be able to tell that there are distinct elements in that picture, right? It may all just look like one thing. So there are a lot of complications here. We brought this example up a few times. Same sort of thing, like, I know what a cup is because I've seen a cup and I was told this is a cup.
And you're able to extrapolate many different kinds of cups.
Exactly. Yeah.
You have an ideal in your head. It's sort of the Platonic ideal of a cup. And there are many ways that a actual cup can vary that theme.
Sure.
But somehow you always recognize the theme.
I recognize every single cup in existence as an imperfect realization of the ideal cup that's in my mind.
Yeah.
Which has Grimace on it, by the way.
Okay.
But at any rate, again, a computer, you could, if you gave it an image and you programmed some software and said, this particular image that you're seeing here is a cup, but then you took a totally different kind of cup, different shape, different size, different color, the computer is not necessarily going to know what that is.
Right. It's going to say, well, this one's blue.
Yeah, you need a huge...
And it's shorter. Yeah, and it's from a different angle.
It's one of those things where you know, there's a difficult problem and there's not necessarily a simple solution to fix it so that the computer understands what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the point I'm trying to make is that this is a non-trivial computer problem that a lot of people have worked on for a long time. And it's absolutely amazing to see how much progress we've made.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And furthermore, this is only half of the issue that we're dealing with here overall, because once you can teach a computer to identify, for example, a cup, how do you get it to explain what that cup is doing in relation to the other things in
right.
the picture?
How does it describe it?
Right.
Yeah, in a way that actually makes sense to
humans.
Humans.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a natural language problem.
Exactly right, because the computer doesn't think in English or whatever language you want it to spit out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and we've talked about natural language issues as well, the idea that machine language and natural language are extremely different. And in fact, programming languages are a bridge between pure machine language and human language. You might not think it if you're not a programmer and you look at raw code. You might think, well, this isn't language that any human would understand. But in fact, that's precisely what it is. It's meant to be that bridging material.
Right.
So getting computers so that they can interpret the natural language innately is a very challenging issue. We've said it before that you can word the exact same thought numerous ways.
Yeah, human language is highly, highly redundant.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're all different kinds. And the differences in word choice might express subtle differences in tone and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But you can basically describe the same thing a cajillion different ways.
Well, uh-huh. Especially,
and with a cajillion different spellings, furthermore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, for example, if you're playing an old text adventure game like Zork,
yes,
you could type walk down the hall or go down the hall, and that text parsing system might be smart enough to know either one and get you down the hall. Say,
right.
Okay, I know what the person just said. But if you type mosey on down the corridor, it may very well say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Or, right.
What did Zork say when you said something unintelligible?
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you mean, or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you were eaten by a Gru if it gets too frustrated at you.
If you're too confusing too
yeah.
often,
Gru
they just grew you.
Gru.
Yeah, no, but that's a great example. The idea that, you know, obviously those programs were only capable of accepting commands that had been pre-programmed into them. And anything that went outside those parameters was an error. It was the message we would get is, I didn't understand what you had to say, but in reality, it could have just as well been file not found.
Uh-huh.
Right. Okay, so now we're combining these two different artificial intelligence problems. On
yep.
one, the complex problem of looking at a scene and recognizing what's going on there, connecting that to other images and context, and the other one, making sense of it in a written language.
Yeah. And
why does this matter?
Yeah, why do we even want to do this if it's so difficult?
A lot of reasons. One of the, well, first of all, we talked about image search, and just being able to automate this would make image search way more efficient for the things that we're looking for. We could much more specific.
Oh, man, if only I could tell. So part of my job is searching for stock images that
uh-huh.
I end up publishing on our website.
And human labeling of stock images, if you guys have never had to search for stock images for your job before, let me tell you, it's one of the most joyous and terrifying things on the planet. Because
yeah.
no matter what you type in, what you're going to get back is some weird clip art, some sexy ladies doing some stuff that may or may not have anything to do with what you just said.
Very often may not.
And maybe what you were actually looking
for.
You
might also find some like truly weird images, like a an overweight, shirtless gentleman sitting at a table with a paper bag over his head, knife and fork in his hands, eating a cartoon hamster. I mean, it's some weird stuff on there.
Seriously, I am almost positive that there is a stock photograph out there somewhere of somebody throwing a sandwich off a cliff. For like, they made it for diet purposes or something like that.
Yeah. You know we're going to get endless examples of that. You know that, right?
If I searched for man throwing a sandwich off a cliff, I should have tried this before we started, but I'm almost positive I would not get that. Instead, I'd get a lady in a bikini sitting on a pinball machine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty accurate. So just increasing the accuracy of image search would be one reason, right? And there are lots of different reasons why our image searches on these things are imperfect. A large part of it is that you've got people gaming the system. They're essentially putting in any tag word they can possibly think of.
Sure.
Because they want their images to be the ones that are purchased. Mm-hmm. But if you want to play fair, then having an automated description would be best, because you can't curate everything by human eyes. It would just take too long. We're generating too much content for that to be a realistic possibility. But another is that it could be a huge help for people who have visual impairments. So someone who is reading a news story, you know, someone who has some sort of visual impairment, maybe they're blind, and there could be pictures that give more context to whatever the story is, but they miss out on that if there's not an actual description of what that picture is. Mm-hmm. Particularly, I mean, there's some content out there where the caption might be playful, but doesn't actually tell you what the picture is.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure. Right. Absolutely. You
know? So this would be a big help for people who are in that situation. It also could speed up web access for people who have limited connectivity to the internet. Perhaps it's over through a cellular network. And it may be that there's some important information they need to get hold of, but, you know, if they're trying to load pictures, it's just taking too long for it to load any kind of page.
If you could have a quick summary of those pictures, it would really speed things up.
Exactly. Yeah.
I also think it's just an important contribution to general artificial intelligence.
Absolutely.
If you're trying to create a system that can mimic all of the functions of the human mind, well, one of the main things humans do is look at something and describe it.
Right. And, you know, the description's just part of it. You know, there's also the interaction, right?
Yeah.
By recognizing things in our environment, we know how to proceed. Well, we can make decisions on how to proceed. So if, for example, we walk into a room and we notice that there are a lot of pedestals around us and there are delicate vases on each pedestal, we know not to go swinging our arms everywhere willy-nilly. But, you know, a robot would not necessarily be able to tell that a vase sitting on a pedestal was not in fact a single piece. It might interpret that as a column.
That's a good mm-hmm. point.
You know,
or that there's even if it could recognize that it was an object sitting on another object, that the vase was delicate or that it was worth not smashing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robots, teaching robots value is a very tricky thing.
Also, they hate vases.
They do.
Hate
they do.
Them.
It's, I think,
only
I think
because
programming,
you program them that way.
I think programming all
that's
robots.
Just robots.
Well, it's because we gave them the basic personality of Gallagher is the problem.
Okay. So automated image description is a very difficult problem, but it's also very worth solving, both in the long term for artificial intelligence and in some specific cases in the short term.
Right.
Who's actually working on this? Where did this come from?
Well, I mean, there are lots of different people in computer science working on this problem, but the thing that kind of spurred on this particular podcast you discovered, right?
Yeah, as I said, it was through Alexis Madrigal's Five Intriguing Things newsletter, and it was a link to the Google Research blog, which is a cool little blog. Some of it's definitely over the average reader's head, but it's also just very interesting and
fun.
Oh,
yeah. This specific blog entry is from Google UK, and it was posted by a bunch of research scientists over at Google. Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where if you go into the Google Research blog, they do get more technical than your average blog does. They're not so technical as to be completely incomprehensible, but I will say,
and they're really good about linking out to terms that you might be unfamiliar
which
with,
which is important because I had to click on every single one of those links. I did so much reading for this one blog post so I could really get a handle on what they were saying. But again, it illustrates the complexity of the problem.
Yeah.
So again, we don't mean to suggest that these Google researchers are the only people working on this problem or that their approach is the only way to do it. were concentrating on it because it was really well documented.
And it was just published on November 17th. We are recording this on November 21st. So it was of immediate interest to us.
Yes.
Okay. So how are we doing this?
Well, first you have to identify what needs to be done before you can figure out how to do it, right?
Yeah.
You have to figure out the things that have to happen in order for this to be a possibility. And they identified several things, including computer vision, which is how machines acquire and analyze images. So how do they get the images in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Is it purely through code? Is it actual visual, you know, is it like a camera system? I mean, if you're talking about robotics, then it's probably a camera system because they're looking around in their environment.
Yeah. Or it could just be sampling from the internet or something like that.
Right, right. Well, with something like an automated search, it could all be code. Like it could be that there's no quote unquote looking at the image, right? But so there's that. There's also object detection, which sounds really easy, but it's incredibly hard. So this is what I was talking about, being able to recognize individual objects within an image. So what separates an object from its background? If I've got a shot, a top-down shot of a table, and there's a book sitting on the middle of that table, then when I look down, I can see that there's a book and there's a table, and I recognize those as two different things. But like I was saying before, if it's a machine and it doesn't have this way of telling the difference there, it may just think of that as a pattern that's on a table, you know, or even a raised part of that table if it can detect depth. It's not a cut and dry thing. So getting a point where you can have a computer that can tell that there are multiple objects within a scene, that's already a challenge, although we've gone a far way to actually do that. But imagine that you are looking at, if you want to think about how hard this is, imagine you're thinking at a overgrown field, and there's someone in a ghillie suit out there. Ghillie suit are those camo suits that have all the plant type material hanging off of them. Some of it's artificial, some of it may actually be gathered from wherever you're going. Those camouflage suits are really convincing. It's really hard to pick someone who's good at being covert. You may not even know that there's a person there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
as hard as that is for us, that's about the equivalent of looking at a book on a table for a computer.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, until you're able to teach a machine how to see in a way, then it's going to be just as difficult to detect that as it would be for us to see that guy in the ghillie suit in the middle of the overgrown field. But once you do get to that, you still have other things to keep in mind, like classification and labeling. So this is a measurement of how accurately a program can assign correct labels to an image. I love the example. Like, if you looked at certain examples within the Google blog post, it eventually took you to a picture of a dog wearing a sombrero.
So you had dog, hat. There's a hat on a dog.
Yeah.
It's a wide-brimmed hat.
Yep. Yeah, these are all important elements. That's part of that classification and labeling. You know, instead of just saying, that's one ugly dog, because
right.
you know, not being able to tell that it's wearing
a
hat.
Got a weird growth.
Yeah, that would be.
Well, more than that, it's dog with the hat and not just dog with something on it.
Sure.
Yeah, so again,
it's not dog with stack of pancakes.
Yeah.
And identifying the fact that there is that relationship, that there is a hat on a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Not just that there is a hat and a dog in the picture, but how do those two objects relate to one another within the context of that picture? So that's also pretty cool.
So as we've said, lots of folks have been working on the problem of how to do this thing. And a common approach has been working on linking computer systems that understand what's going on in pictures with computer systems that understand what's going on in sentences, and letting the two match up images and phrases.
Mm-hmm.
But these scientists at Google were approaching it from a different way. They're trying to create a system where the two halves work together directly with the same data, rather than comparing and contrasting two separate sets of data, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they were inspired to do this by recent language translation research, in which one half of a system would create a diagram of a sentence in one language, say English, and the second half would look at that diagram and generate a sentence from it in another language, say French.
Yeah, and again, this was a part of classification. It wasn't just a word to word, you know, what is the analogous word in this other language for this, the one that we're detecting here.
Right.
But rather, what is the meaning of this sentence, and what is the what is the phrase in this other language that has that same meaning?
Exactly.
Because doing word for word translations, if you've ever worked in another language, often
doesn't work at all.
Right. Yeah. You realize as you say it to someone who's a native speaker of that language, you said, well, that's a very weird way of putting what you just said. So yeah, it's a really interesting, idea. And the way they do it is particularly technical. So I'm going to take this from a very kind of high level because, well, first, I got to be totally honest. It goes so technical. I definitely don't understand all of it.
Yeah.
So
well, we're talking about neural networks.
Yeah. Here. So I'm trying to take it from a high enough level where I feel like I still have a general grip on what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But if I dove down any deeper, then I would most likely be giving at least equal amounts information and misinformation.
Yeah. Yeah. But so like Joe said, we're talking about, artificial neural networks, which are the systems that these language researchers were using. And
exactly.
Google decided to go with the same thing.
Yeah. They're systems that are attempting to replicate something that happens inside an organic brain.
Yeah. So, anything that is an artificial neural network is trying to kind of mimic nature, essentially, at some level. Some of them are more like the neural networks you would see in our brains. Some of them react like neurons, but they are arranged in a way that's very different from the way our brains are arranged. So, when we say these neural networks, just keep in mind, we're not necessarily talking about an artificial brain.
It's
not the same thing.
It's more like the tiny constituents, you know, millions of which make up a brain.
Right. Think of each neuron as capable of doing various processes, whatever uh-huh. those processes might be, on information that comes to it, and then send it on to other neurons, mm-hmm. which will then add their own element of whatever it may be. So one of them might be, all right, whenever I get input from this other neuron, I know to perform this specific mathematic process, and then I know to pass it on to this other neuron. And even that's an oversimplification, but it gives you kind of an idea of what's going on. So one of the two types of artificial neural networks used by Google, and keep in mind, there are lots of different variations of artificial neural networks,
mm-hmm.
Is called a convolutional neural network. And it's funny because when I think convoluted, I don't think of that as being a positive thing. But convolutional neural network in this case is a feed-forward neural network, which means there's an actual pathway to follow that has a beginning and an end. So think of it like, it's got a start and a destination. And things always begin at the start and they always end up at the destination. And the pathway has lots of neurons along it that can do work upon whatever the input is. So you have this as the start, and it's essentially there to classify objects within an image, and that data ends up getting encoded according to however you've programmed that network.
Right. You wind up with this really huge amount of data coming off of a single image.
Right. And all of that gets fed into the second artificial neural network, which is called a recurrent neural network, which is not a direct pathway. This is an interconnected model that creates what is called a directed cycle. So there are several subsets of this kind of network. The fully recurrent network is probably the easiest to imagine. That's one where every single neuron has a direct connection or directed connection with every single other neuron within the network. Now, these obviously get way more complicated the more neurons you add. This is one of the reasons why having an artificial brain model is so hard, mm-hmm. because you're talking on the order of 80 billion neurons to make a simple artificial brain, 80 billion units that have interconnections with not necessarily every other node, like every other neuron, but enough to make this complicated and slow on the classical computing scale. At any rate, getting back to theirs, this one is what will end up processing all that information to describe the images that were classified from the first one. So the first one classifies all the stuff. This one is what creates the language used to describe those images to make them meaningful to a human audience, so that when we get the description, it reflects whatever the picture shows and doesn't, like, it's not like a lady sitting down at a table reading a book and it says frog dancing on skyscraper.
Well, hopefully. I mean, the system is certainly not perfect. Really good system.
And it's neat because these neural networks, the other thing that these do that I didn't mention before is they can learn.
Mm-hmm.
They can, once a process goes through, if you start making that process, you know, replicating that process, either by feeding the same thing through over and over or feeding similar things through, it starts to pick up on that. So this is very similar to that idea we had about feeding in the thousands and thousands of images and videos of cats, mm-hmm. and how the machine was able to learn what a cat was without anyone telling it what a cat was. Same sort of thing here. It's that same process. It ends up kind of like a memory, how mm-hmm. our memories are pathways of neurons that fire in a specific sequence, more or less. And every time we remember it, we're replicating that as close as we can mm-hmm. anyway. Similar to what's going on here. Pretty cool. And like I said, to get more detailed is beyond me.
Yeah, beyond any of us sitting at this table.
I would check out that blog post if you get a chance, because it's got a great image where it sort of shows the difference between what a good description of an image looks like and what a failed description looks like.
And the
gradients in between.
Sure. It had this rating system, It probably hasn't been destroyed since we've made this podcast. I hope not. Otherwise, we're futile in telling you to go check it out.
We're backward thinkers.
So humans have ranked the photos by like, well, this totally has, this is an accurate description all the way to this is not what that is.
So for example, like a person riding a motorcycle on a dirt road is described with the sentence, a person riding a motorcycle on a dirt road.
Mm-hmm. Aces. So,
sort of a dirt road. Actually, I would say it looks kind of like a motocross track, but that's close enough. Yeah. Okay, and then it would have sort of like describes with minor errors. So there was one that says, close-up of a cat laying on a couch. It's a cat sitting on a bed.
But, you know,
good.
Yeah.
Cat in the photo. It's not really a close-up, but yeah, you know, it's sort of what's going on.
My favorite was the one that's labeled a refrigerator filled with lots of food and drinks, and in fact, it's some kind of parking sign with stickers all over it.
Yeah, in a busy city tunnel, it looks like. Yeah.
And if you look at the images, the way that they show how the computer quote unquote sees the image, which really it's just a visualization for our benefit, but it shows with different color boxes around each individual element to show how it's picking them out and labeling it. Mm-hmm. It gives you an idea. Like when you think of it that way, you think, wow, this is a lot more complicated than I imagined. I mean, we often think, like, I don't know what you guys think. I shouldn't say we. I often think of automated image description. I often will imagine the simplest of images in my head, just thinking, like, you know, it would look like an Apple commercial, you know, white background with one solitary image in the middle and the description of what that is. I don't necessarily think, oh, wait, no, this refers to every kind of image, including, you know, pictures of me and my friends at a restaurant with lots of other stuff going on. And like when you think about that and all the different elements that can appear in a single picture, then you realize, wow, this is really amazing that they've been able to create anything remotely approaching automated image.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Because that's a thing that our eyes do. They naturally pick out items of interest from visual scenes.
So same sort of thing again applies with robotics. I mean, you know, I know this is mostly about image description, but the same kind of processing is really important for machines, especially machines that are going to be interacting with humans on a more frequent basis, to be able to recognize an environment, not just to pick out the potential obstacles that a robot might encounter so it can maneuver around them, but also just to understand, these are the elements within this scene that I need to be careful around because they are either people and thus I don't want to injure them, or they are things that are delicate and I don't want to break them.
Or these are the objects that I need to interact with, and this is how I might go about interacting with them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And of course, beyond that, to communicate information about the environment.
Sure.
And I mean, that's something that would be amazingly helpful if a robot could describe to you what happened 3 minutes ago.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and for robots, we often talk about robots used for first responders, a robot that could be able to not just look for signs of life, but actively describe the environment back to operators so that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean,
you know, say like, oh, hey, that pillar is down over there and the floor is caved in over here.
Yeah.
And there's a pile of debris. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because there are a lot of sensors on a robot that can detect things that don't necessarily translate into direct visual data for us, you know, not just the cameras, but other things, infrared sensors, stuff that, you know, would need some processing on our end to make it meaningful. But if it's able to communicate directly that information, that would be incredibly helpful. So, a very important part of artificial intelligence. And again, I think it also illustrates that artificial intelligence is a much bigger idea than just a machine that quote unquote thinks like we do. That's the way a lot of us will describe, like, that's kind of my go-to thought whenever I hear the words artificial intelligence, mainly, I guess, because of Hollywood. But, the reality is it encompasses way more than that. So, excellent work on uncovering that little item and suggesting it, Joe. I think it made a great topic.
As I've said, it weren't me.
Well, you saw it, and then you brought it to our attention. If it hadn't been for you, we probably would have been talking about something that would not have required me to fire my entire brain at it for a day and a half of solid research.
Well, I spend most of my time trying to figure out weird ways to make you exercise your neurons because I need those healthy for something I'm planning on doing in a couple months.
That's
fair. That's not creepy at all. Good, good. That's great.
I personally thank you, Joe, because otherwise I'd just be sitting here drooling. So I, you know, sure, your plan is likely nefarious, but I'm going to go along with it because it's benefiting me in the short term.
What's your blood type?
So forward thinking, if you have suggestions for future topics, you should get in touch with us and let us know what those are. Our email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com or drop us a line on Google+, on Facebook, or on Twitter. At Twitter and Google+, we have the handle fwthinking. Just search for that at Facebook. We'll pop right up. Let us know what you want to hear about. Or maybe you want to chime in. Or maybe you found that stock image of a man throwing a sandwich off a cliff.
Oh, I want to see that. If you send it in, I will replace whatever image I originally put with this podcast and use that.
And and we'll even throw a credit in. We'll say that, you know, you were the one who found it for us. So
well, assuming now there are photo permissions. Also,
yes. So we have to be able to use it with permission. So if it's a stock photo that we, you know, from a stock company that we actually use, then we can totally do that. And so as long as that all lines up, I know that's a lot of ifs, you'll get credit for it. And just think, you too will have contributed to our forward-thinking quest of people throwing food off of high elevations. I don't know. At any rate, get in touch with us, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.